When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Oh. There it goes. That's Claudia Winkleman's weekly shoe drop. Goes over via helicopter. It goes over our house to the Strictly Studios on Friday afternoon. Hey, I'm Sean Keaveney. This is another edition of Sean Keaveney's Creative Cul-de-Sac, where we take a deep dive into lost ideas. It's a symposium of dead ideas, things that you jotted down that never went anywhere. I've got fucking millions of them. And yes, it is a bit sweary. I should actually do give a bit of a disclaimer on this particular episode. It does finish with a very bawdy song written by Bob Dylan. Not sure where it came from, actually. I mean, it's my rendition of it, but it's not surfaced on any of the Bob Dylan bootlegs thus far, which is surprising to me. Because they had all those, was it the Whitmark years or whatever it was? You know, there's like a sort of exhaustive reissue of many of Dylan's bootlegs and offcuts and recordings. It wasn't there. So it's a real exclusive, but I do warn you, in case there are children listening, why are they if they are? Should be at school. Or watching Justin Fletcher or something. Hey, I want a pint. Maybe get them to close their ears at the end and at the beginning, because there's a lot of fucking swearing in this edition. So, where do we start? When they begin. Le begin. Incidentally, I've just had a bit of early lunch. It's not even 11:30 yet. I've got a cup of stovetop coffee on the go here. 1.5 sugars. Don't judge me. And my wife, who shall remain nameless, it was our youngest's birthday a few days ago, and she put on a cracking spread. Not my daughter, she's only 2, for fuck's sake. She's not that fast a developer. I mean, my wife did. And she made some pulled pork. You know the rules now. All pork must be pulled. All caramel must be salted. Those are the new rules of the millennium. And she made a cracking pulled pork. And we're still working our way through it. And she said to me today, Sean, that pork has to be eaten, or else it's going to go off. So I've hurled myself on the pork sword this morning, and fixed myself a finger of finest pulled pork on a finger roll, and it's gone down a fucking treat. So that's where we're at. I'm going to work my way through a few bits and bobs and any other business. You never know, Mark Maron in a voice might pop up at some point, but I hope not, because he depresses me, makes me feel less than. So today I'm just going to... Some of this shit... Will somebody please email me and tell me how to turn that fucking thing off? Just bits... Oh, fuck me. There's going to be another one in a minute. It's my Google Calendar. I just don't know how to deactivate it. Come on. Go on. Finished? Good. Mostly... bits from my iPhone today. A couple of bits from the trusty mahogany box. Oh, I fucking told you. I think that's it now. Oh no, that's my accountant. Oh Jesus, I'm in deep shit. I'll reply to that in a minute, Fraser. No, I haven't got any savings. Fuck me. Anyway, first thing I'm going to read out is just an idea that I just sketched. I just literally wrote into my iPhone. And this is to do with my youngest child, my daughter, who shall also remain nameless. Because, you know, essentially we're like Kim and Kanye, me and the wife. You know, we can't go out the fucking front door without getting papped. So we're trying to keep some semblance of private life, if you don't mind. But I've written here, the baby had balloons. Pop them, she instructed. I said, are you sure? She said, yes, Daddy. So sweet. So we popped them. And then she said, want them back. Isn't that poignant? I've written, harsh life lesson in loss. I'm such a good parent. I'm not.
Oh, a bit too much sugar in that.
I've only got 14% of my battery left, so I better make this quite a quick one today. Yeah, I should have thought of that, shouldn't I? I'm going to give you some bits of stand-up that I've found from Glastonbury. As I've said before, I've done I must have done upwards of 8 or 9 sets for Simon and Matt at the Crow's Nest at the Top of the Park stage over the years from about 2012 through to 2019. And the quality of the performances has varied from perfunctory to brilliant, mostly hovering around perfunctory. I found a little set list in one of my notebooks. Strongest stuff. These are my sort of skip bits. Scotland, piss, ISIS, knitting circle, funerals, pottery, kids and Snapchat. Upon my death. Antibiotics, keys, uncle, name that virus. That I thought was a funny little bit that I did in one of my sort of live and languorous podcasts once with a studio audience, because I used to do, I used to have a projector and project photos off my laptop, and I did a little name that virus sketch. I think it was around the time of the Ebola fear. You remember about 2014-15, I got fucking terrified, but I didn't want to get on the tube with the kids and stuff. I thought we're all going to get Ebola and die. That is coming, isn't it? You know, we'll look back on COVID with fucking fondness probably in 40 years' time. Go, that was an easy one. It was a great one, that, wasn't it? COVID, you remember COVID? Oh, it was fucking brilliant. I got 10 days in bed without the kids. I was fucking brilliant. Not like this Ebola. I've been shitting out my fucking kidneys, mate. I've got 4 hours to live. You know, anyway, keeping it as light as we can. But yeah, the bit was that I just flash up like electron microscope photographs of viri and get the audience to guess what they were, you know. Common cold, absolutely right, you know. Anyway, I'm going to read out a little bit of stand-up here. So forgive me, again, it's always a bit weird, I think, when I do stand-up bits because I'm not performing it, really, I'm reading it. So forgive me, but I think it's interesting anyway. I love Edinburgh, so this is when I was in Edinburgh. Thanks, Sean, for that side note. Fucking want to work that out. I love Edinburgh, though. My favourite place is the rather non-Scottish Mosque Kitchen. That's a little note. For people who know Edinburgh, they'll know the Mosque Kitchen. It's a fantastic Indian cafe. We used to eat there every day when we did our Edinburgh Festival shows for Six Music. I love the place, but I do love London as well, where I live, you know. Though I do live 4 miles from the biggest collection of arseholes outside Gene Simmons' Polaroid collection. That's right, the Houses of Commons. It's rude, but I like it. One of the things that upsets me about modern Britain is the lack of journalistic standards these days, though. I read a headline yesterday, I've seen it many times over the last few years, that simply read, massive Tory cuts. How could the sub-editors miss the N out of a headline that big? I did that joke about 2014. I've seen many people do that joke subsequently. I'm not saying they got it off me. I'm just saying that I was in there as well. I do miss the North, though, I say. £5 for a shandy down south. And then I say something about I could buy a house in Hamilton for about that amount of money, etc. Lazy North-South cliche, etc., etc. Seriously, though, folks, it's out of control now. You know it costs 50p for a piss in central London now. 50p per pee. It's one thing to be priced out of the property market in London, quite another to be priced out of the piss market. But no, adults are like walking around London going, why have you wet yourself? You know, because I couldn't get the money together to have a piss, that's why. It was explained to me that the reason these toilets with the barriers have been put in are to dissuade them from being used for cottaging. But for 50p, I would expect to be tossed off. Always got a good laugh, that bit. And I've got a system now to get my money's worth out of these 50p toilets. I go through the barrier, pay my 50p, have a sit-down wee, and then I sit there and wait until I need a shit. Sometimes for hours. That's how I get my fucking money's worth. I'd be buggered if I'm getting out of there in a hurry. Turns out I probably will end up being buggered. So that was a nice bit of stand-up, I thought. Just a little pause to check that we're still recording. I've not run out of tape. 10 exact minutes so far. It's felt like longer, hasn't it? Let's go back to the material. I found this as well. I've got a film idea here. And why not? The film is called The Accountant. Has there been a film recently called The Accountant? I've got a feeling there has been. But this is from years ago, this idea. And it's about a very successful accountant who makes millions of pounds, dollars, let's keep it American, simply by being slightly creative about his clients' accounts whilst remaining completely within the law. Easy to do. And I've just written, I have this idea for one particular scene. The accountant is in Las Vegas. He's writhing with two naked women on a bed, covered in receipts. At one point, he grabs them up in his fists as the women writhe behind him, holds them up into the sky, and laughs and says, I'll claim for it all. So again, I thought that was quite funny. What about this? Grand Theft Auto, special edition, picking up shopping for your grandma, nipping to B&Q for paint. Has anybody done that as a joke yet? You know, if I was really... I'm sure I've got some mates who could mock that up. You know, like a really faithfully reproduced Grand Theft Auto, Grand Theft Auto, or something. Grand, instead of Grand Theft Auto, then it'd be Grand Errand Auto, where you're the grandson and you have to do errands for your grandmother. Like I say, you go out for some shortbread, you drop a betting slip off for her, bring her a quarter bottle of rum, clear out some detritus from the back garden, all that kind of shit. It's a brilliant idea, isn't it? One of my wonderful listeners, Charlotte Bond, reminded me recently, and I don't know how she knows about this, because I'm sure she's probably too young to have been at one of the stand-up shows where I'd performed this routine, and I must have performed it once or twice in my entire career in inverted commas in stand-up. But she said, do you remember when you did that routine about Roy Orbison's song, I Drove All Night? I honestly thought it was really funny. But again, I've got a feeling that somebody else did a sort of similar thing to it. So I think I discontinued it out of a lack of confidence. But I just used to sing the song and then comment on it as if I was the woman that Roy was singing to. You know, I drove all night to get to you. Is that all right? A bit weird, but yeah, I suppose. If you're that desperate for a shag. I drove all night, crept in your room. Whoa, 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 you did what? You crept into my room. Okay, probably didn't scan. I see what you're saying. Go on, carry on. Woke you from your sleep. Whoa, 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 not on. You know how much I need my fucking sleep, how crabby I get if I don't get it. What you do, coming all this way in the middle of the night, 3 o'clock, shaking me awake with your hard on, waggling in my face and your fucking sunglasses, you weirdo. To make love to you, is that alright? Call the fucking cops, this guy's a pervert. Told you it was a sweary version, and I make no fucking apologies for that. How long have we got left? Let's have a look. I'm trying to keep these to as close to 15 minutes as I can. 14:11. Look at that. I'll tell you what then. Why don't we finish on the strong song? Okay. Because having a look through my exhaustive notes, I find an incredible find, which was from the Bob Dylan archive. God knows why Bob Dylan and his people haven't released this, as I said at the top of this podcast, because it's absolute gold. I have got no copy of a recording of Bob doing it, but we've just got the words and the chords. So I'm going to try and bring it to life for you now. It's just a snippet, a snatch, a tiny snatch of a song that he wrote about for Joan Baez in 1963. No recording exists. It's just a scrap of paper that was found in his attic on which were inscribed these words and chords. The title, For Joan. I just hope I can do it justice. I've lost my fucking plectrum.
Put your smackers round my knackers. Put your gums round my plums. Will you talk too dirty to me? Put your thumb up my bum. Will it make it look bigger if I shave all my pubes? And have you brought the lube?
Oh God, that's so beautiful. For Joan from Bob. Okay. Thereby closing yet another terrifying snapshot into the mind and the notebook of Sean Keaveney. It's time to look in to the mercurial and murky notebook straddling world of our next guest on Sean Keaveney's Creative Cul-de-Sac.
Put your smackers round my neckers. Put your gums round my plums.
Our next cul-de-sac dweller is such a household name in his native Scotland, he can't walk down the street in Glasgow without being hit on, selfied, or hoist by his own catchphrases. Much like the wonderful comic actor Karen Dunbar, unlike Iron Brew, he is yet to cross over into mainstream madness under the wall, but his comic writing, his timing, his characters are the stuff of comic legend. Just a glance at his Twitter feed and you will see him mint at least two lol-tabulous jokes per day, which I think is a pretty amazing strike rate for anybody. Naveed from Still Game, AJ in River City. I mean, look at these credits. He was in the Stan and Ollie film, Hope Springs, Rabsy Nesbitt, Fresh Meat, Meet the Magoons. It's Sanjeev Kohli. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Well, I'm better than you because you've got a cold.
I've got a cold. But it's really weird, like, speaking to you in person, because, I feel like you've been a presence in my house for so long. But also, because our most recent sort of Twitter exchange was me seeing your names on a writing credit. Turns out we wrote for the same show and I didn't even know. I'm watching, there was a show called, because people outside of Scotland might not be aware, but Karen Dunbar, who you just mentioned, absolutely fantastic writer-performer, had her own sketch show for a while and made it in the early 2000s. And me and Donnie McCleary, who I write Fags, Mangs and Bags with, we were almost like, not the main writers, but we'd worked with Karen Lode, so we got loads to do, which is a joy because she's just one of those people, you can give her anything and she'll make it work. Mm. But like Lisa Kudrow, she can make anything funny. Mm. And just, I'm watching an old episode on the Scottish Channel and your name pops up. I'm like, it's possible there's more than one Sean Keaveney in the business, but unlikely. And then, yeah, you'd written a sketch for that show. So, weirdly, we had been on the same writing team without even knowing it.
It made my day, that. And actually got to meet Karen, not that long ago, a couple of years ago, probably on some Radio 4 program, and got to tell her, because me and my mate Steve Burke, this is kind of one of the origins of this podcast, Sean Keaveney's Creative Cul-de-Sac, he said in the third person, because I've got this treasure trove, this colossal mahogany trunk. It's actually one of those IKEA paper boxes full of fucking notebooks and ideas that haven't gone anywhere, and that's kind of the point. But me and my mate Steve, that was how it all started about 20 years ago. We decided we were going to become sketch writers because we thought we were funny. And none of them got bought except one. I got 150 quid and the Karen Dunbar Show bought it, the one that you're talking about.
And I know the sketch you're talking about. It was the jazz singer that never actually gets to sing anything, which I remember thinking at the time was really good, but also it felt like it came from somewhere else. Weirdly, because Karen does musical stuff, like, but she tends to do her own musical stuff. So this is obviously the joke was she didn't get to sing, which I thought was a brilliant kind of a mechanism anyway. But it's so gratifying to find out that you wrote it.
Well, this is it. This is why you're here, Sanjeev, as well as just being big in the game of comedy. And certainly, like I say, especially in Scotland, you're a bit, you have a sort of quasi-legendary status. But to me, this is a sort of first question to you before we dig into some of your stuff. Like, I feel like you're a kindred spirit because you seem always to be on the lookout for a joke. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, no, I remember an incident when I was... incident's too much of a... is picking up too much. The year must have been 1981 because it was the year that Bucks Fizz won Eurovision with Making Your Mind Up, okay? So that's... because this is important to the story. So... the school I used to go to, I would make sure I went early because I loved to play football before school. And I just remember I had a joke in my head, which I'd made up myself. And the joke was, I can't remember how I would have phrased it because I never actually told it, thankfully, because I'd have been bullied relentlessly. But the joke was going to be something like, did anyone see that show last night about... about frying eggs? It was called Panorama, okay? Now...
oh, yes.
So I'm 11 years old, Sean, 10 or 11. I've got no business doing jokes like that. Thankfully, Brian Rooney jumped in before me and said, does anyone know where Bucks Fizz is going on the holiday? They haven't made their minds up yet. And that got a massive laugh. And I remember thinking, park that Panorama joke for the rest of your life. So I'm obviously thinking in those ways quite early doors. And as a huge, huge consumer of comedy, we're both of a generation where there were only three channels and then four when we were sort of like, I guess you'd have been eight or nine when Channel 4 arrived. And anything vaguely comedy related, we would like tape and watch and watch. I remember watching episodes of the Kenny Everett video show like over and over and over again, to the point where we even used to dub over the voices on the VHS player, which is something you could do. I'm obsessed with comedy, but I was also incredibly, clinically shy. Like, I would run upstairs if guests came to the house. So I never thought performing would ever be something I did. I never thought writing would be anything I would do. I just loved consuming comedy, and I loved... I'm quite mathematical, and there's obviously loads of maths in humour.
It is. It's that the rule of three and stuff like that, isn't it?
It's... oh, completely, completely. I mean, the rule of three, I mean, it's so basic, isn't it? It's like one, two, three, the three-act structure of films and all the rest of it. And also, I mean, I did a tweet yesterday, but I have to say it's a repeat of one I did before, which I'm quite proud of, which is everything that in England that outside of Nottingham is called Tingham. And the thing is that that's actually a Venn diagram of a joke, if you think about it, because you've got the circle and you've got the universe outside the circle. So that's pure maths, that joke. And that's the sort of, I guess, because I'm quite mathematical and I know that maths and comedy and music are all interlinked. They're all about rhythm. I mean, the best jokes have got a beautiful rhythm about them as well, don't they? So I guess I just came from, because I'm mathematical, humour just seemed to fit in quite nicely.
I mean, there's so much to go at, and you know, the CV is extremely long, and we're not actually here to pick into that. What we're really here to do is look into this little treasure trove of forgotten ideas. You know, this is like the expo of dead ideas, this. and that's why I like hearing things like your first joke, you know, sort of Panorama. Let's dig in now, and let's read us something from your notes that you, either you're secretly proud of and you think should need a bit more heat, or you just think, oh, I forgot about
this. Have a look then. You know, what I was going to say was the very first thing that Donnie and I wrote together actually was, so what happened was, did you ever write for Weekending? Was that something you ever did?
No.
So this was the Radio 4, it's not, don't look for it, it's not there anymore, but it was a Radio 4 topical sketch show. And it was voracious. I mean, it was like millions of writers on it, and you had your commissioned writers and your non-com writers. So they were writers like us that were kind of at the bottom of the chain who would be lucky to get something on. I think eventually I did get a commission, but the point was that Weekending used to tour around Britain, so they'd occasionally do it from Glasgow. So there was, God, going back to 97, this is, it was being done in Glasgow. And so they got all the Scottish writers together, and I've never seen a collection of more bitter hacks. It was, you know, I remember there's one guy that was actually on his lunch break from his job at the bank, and he just looked miserable. And I looked around the room, and there's only one guy that seemed to be even like kind of vaguely, you know, gregarious, and it's this guy, Donnie McCleary. And we met up at lunch, and we were chatting away, and it turned out we liked all the same things, like Python and The Young Ones and all the rest of it. So he just said, look, do you want to come around my house like next week and we'll just maybe write something? I said, well, how does that work? Because I hadn't long been writing at this point and I'd never written with anyone else. I said, do you just start writing with someone? Is that how it works? And then we went round and we wrote a sitcom pilot in like 2 days. And the thing that we wrote was, I think we came up with the title first, and I can't remember if it was me or him, but I said something about Scottish widows. And they thought, that sounds like a sitcom rather than a, you know, an actual life assurance company. And then we had this idea of it was seven widows that all their husbands had died in the same fishing incident, and that they were living in this kind of three-story house, and it was all generations of women. And I couldn't tell you what the plot was, but to this day, I think it's a really good idea for... And also as well, really, really, you know, now you're told to write for women, you know, or don't just write male characters, but
don't do the male gaze thing. But you did it all.
And it wasn't
years
really
ago.
Even a cynical thing. It was just from a stupid idea for a title. And I guess, you know, I mean, my mum's really funny, and so I guess it wasn't even an issue for me.
It's me. You're about to hear an advert now. If you want to listen to the podcast ad free and my Friday radio show, all you got to do is sign up to the Patreon if you fancy. Not if you don't. But if you do, the link is in the episode notes. Carry on.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
What other brilliant ideas lay nestling in the iPhone notepad?
I've got one here. Accountant and client at a football match. So this was, I remember now. I'd been to see, it was a football team that my brother and sister-in-law were involved with, the Broomhill Sports Club, and they're kind of like lower level team, and they managed to actually get to the fourth round of the Scottish Cup, and they played Hibs. So you had this big away day going to watch this game, and the BSC fans were, I mean, they really went for it. They brought like megaphones and like drums and all of it, and they were, but there was, look, I'm a football fan, right? And it embarrasses me how offensive football fans are, and how it seems to be you can say anything about anyone and there's no comeback, right? But they started singing about Jack Ross, who was the Hibs manager at the time, and there was absolutely no basis in fact for this whatsoever, not that that mattered, but they started singing, "His more's a mattress. No, his more's a dad mattress. His dad's a pedo. Jack Ross, his more is a mattress," to the tune of The Great Escape, right? And I turned to my nephew and I said, "Where'd they get this from?" He said, "Oh, it just scans." So
just
to be fair, they did quite a good job. I mean, you know, it worked like rhythmically and all the rest of it, and it worked to the tune. His mother's a mattress, his dad's a pedo, and so I just imagined like an accountant taking his client to a football match, and they're shouting this stuff, but between the verses, they're having a serious discussion about, you know, work, and then they're jumping back on. So I think that was just. The point there was just how our IQ drops when we're watching football. And I'm, you know, it embarrasses me because I am a football fan, but I think...
I love the juxtaposition, you're right though, I love the juxtaposition that you're creating there between a sort of... Because it's always, it feels like that's a really great standard in comedy, the sort of well-heeled, well-to-do, respectable person, but then flicking into this complete thuggery and then flicking back out of it into... So anyway, I think that 2021 could be a really good year for us as far as profits are concerned.
Your dad's a pedo!
That kind of thing.
I mean, we talk about it, in especially with the Celtic Rangers thing, we talk about 90-minute bigots. Where, you know, people are genuinely for 90 minutes are talking about being up to their knees in Fenian blood. And yet they wouldn't dream of seeing anything like that when they got home. They probably work with, you know, amongst Catholics and Protestants and their pals. So, I suppose that was sort of the point I was making there. But, yeah, that came to naught. What else I got here? Guy telling an evolved joke on a train... And then is interrupted by the train announcer, who then proceeds to tell the same joke. I still think there's something in that. It would just take some doing. I mean, the thing is that I've got like a series worth of sketch ideas, which, you know, may still see the light of day. But sketch shows are kind of passé now.
This is the idea of the last one that you said. The guy's quite proud of this joke and he's just about to tell it, and then the announcer ruins it by telling the end of the joke.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, he interrupts it by giving some information and then he tells the joke.
Yeah.
What else I got here? Oh, well, now, here's the other thing as well is that I've got this kind of folder of ideas. Now, the good thing is that, so I write and perform a show called Fags, Mags and Bags on Radio 4, and we can put a lot of these kind of half-baked ideas or niche observations in the script, in the show, because, like, I don't do stand-up. I mean, I do Twitter, but I don't do stand-up, so sometimes it's a good place to put kind of observation-y stuff in when my character Ramesh or Donnie's character Dave are just chatting in the shop, sort of things. They're set in a shop, you see. So, like, I've written here, Vampire AGM, Fish Finger Crosses, Geordie Vampire. Now, the idea of that was that it was going to be like an actual Vampire AGM, and, you know, that you got your regional vampires representing. And so they're saying, can we please have a show of hands? Are Fish Finger Crosses... are they legit? I mean, if they've not been blessed with holy water, are we repelled by fish finger crosses? What about lolly sticks? Do they work? And then a Geordie pipes up, says, I just like to say, right, just like straight up, like, no one takes us seriously in Newcastle, right? They just don't, because it's the accent. I don't know what it is. And the irony is that, Dracula came to Corby, didn't he? But no, they don't take us seriously, do they? And I just love the idea of a Geordie vampire. So but what we've done is we've actually taken those ideas, and we've just recorded series 10 of Fags, Mags and Bags, actually in the edit right now, Sean. And we put all this stuff in that. So the idea is we've got so my character's son Sanjay, he's a bit in love with Grebo, who's his best friend. He's actually in love with him and hero worships him, and Grebo has decided to identify as a vampire. So we're kind of sort of having a bleak look at just the whole identifying as and, you know, thing. So we've got all this vampire stuff in there because so when he says, oh, that's Grebo a vampire now, we grill him. So also, can Grebo come into the shop? Because, you know, I've got mini Kievs in the freezer. But you don't get the smell, do you, when they've been in the freezer, do you? So I don't know. And it's saying to him, you know, can you have penny arrabbiata? It's got garlic in it. It's just stupid stuff like that. So we managed to recycle some of that vampire chat into...
You need an outlet.
And it's a nice place to put it. Yeah.
You need an outlet, and it can't always just be Twitter, can it? You know?
Yeah. So I've got a couple of places I can put this stuff, thankfully.
And we must quickly touch on corner shops and stuff, because Navid in Still Game... and his wife Mira, they run the corner shop, and that's where a lot of that the action happens. And as you say, Fags, Mags and Bags. Did your parents have one?
Yeah, so when I was about...
And you worked in it for a little while when you were early 20s,
I would go in
you?
After school and help out for a couple of hours, and that was where my obsession really started, because apart from anything else, I would see my mum wearing like a shawar kameez. And the thing is, my mom was a trained teacher. She's incredibly articulate, as is my dad. He was a teacher. So you'd have people coming into the shop and they probably didn't quite know how to broach this wee Asian woman. And then her English was brilliant. And also she always impressed on us that our English should be good. I remember once saying to someone, would you like a bag? Do you want a bag? And my mom said, no, you say, would you wish a bag? Which to me sounds wrong anyway. But it was just that thing of, and I think this is where the people pleasing thing comes in. I think it's almost like I took from that, we're representing here. You know, we're representing Asians, so, you know, always make a good impression. And I think that's where that actually comes from. But also just the fact that she was almost like there was a one point, because she trained as a social worker, I remember once someone came in and my mum helped her with the forms and stuff. So it felt like it was more than a shop. It was almost like Cheers. It was like mum was a tiny Asian Ted Danson. Or maybe more like Carla, but you know, it was that thing of where people did know your name, and obviously the whole thing about news agents is, without wanting to, if I'm your shopkeeper, I know your business. If you're in for, you know, if you're in for a fishing magazine, well, I know you're into fishing. If you're in to get a Lucozade and a bumper puzzler, I know that you're visiting someone in hospital.
For instance, if you're one of the local fellas who's been married for 31 years, but you've come in for prophylactics, for instance, or condoms, I know that you're getting your leg over somewhere else in the
exactly
town.
And
you're exposing yourself.
Exactly, it's what you choose to do with that information, Sean. Do you choose it to be a negative force or a positive force? And what we did with Fags and Mags is we said Ramesh and Dave are nice people, so they'll use this information for the good. But also the other thing about news agents and about confectioners is it's just how surreal everything is. You know, you know, we make up names of crisps like chicken acrobats and prawn small particle colliders. People will buy crisps. Really surreal. Like, or chocolates. Like, remember, did you have chocolate tools when you were growing up? Like little miniaturized like saws and spanners.
Like people, I don't think that we had that, which I'm crestfallen about. All I can really remember, as far as that fun stuff was concerned, was the chocolate cigarette.
So, but it's quite a high concept, you know. Also, there's the little rubbery fried eggs, like miniaturized fried eggs. And someone's had the idea to miniaturize a fried egg and make it into confection. That's actually quite a big deal. And yet, you're going into these shops every day and just buying these things like it's nothing. So I think this, again, it's about juxtaposition, isn't it? About the quotidian and the quite really surreal. And like, I love when those two worlds collide. So to me, it was a no-brainer in terms of being a hotbed of comedy. And we've had a lot of fun with it. Radio 4 have been very nice to us and just let us do what we want and be really quite out there and surreal. But also, we've unwittingly written a family comedy because it's always like Ramesh and Dad and Mum and Dad and the two boys are the sons. And, you know, we can have all that generation stuff going on as well, which is great.
And do you think that with stuff like that, and talking about corner shops, and talking about and like something like Still Game, I watch it and enjoy it because there's a certain undertow of nostalgia to it. Do you think that you're representing a soon to be bygone era in a sense? You know, because you get these like Gettier motorbikes now. Oh, I need a pencil and a fried egg. Oh, we can be there in 90 seconds.
This is only the latest threat to the corner shop, Sean, because it used to be like it would be the big out-of-town supermarkets and then it was the petrol forecourts. But the corner shop, like cockroaches and Jeffrey Archer, have managed to withstand the test of time. And I think they will beat off all comers. You know, I've always said this, you sowed the seed of doubt in my mind, because I used to say this line, if you want to buy one toffee crisp, you're not going to do it online. But maybe, actually, yeah. You will now.
Maybe it's becoming reality now.
I really, really hope not, though, because you're not going to get the chat, are you? You know, like it's
like, for fuck's sake, you know, how can you spin out 19 years of a sitcom about a guy, a Gettier driver on a blue and yellow bike, you know? Or maybe you can, I don't know.
Exactly.
Somebody probably is doing that as we speak. Can we have one more little deep dive into your notes, please?
Oh yeah, it was, I do hope to make this sketch one day. So it's a Tinder date, and the woman shows up and the guy said that he's blind, that he's partially sighted, but he's like, he clearly isn't, and he's eating and he's like picking up the salt cellar and say, this is all luck. Is this salt? Yeah, I was just complete, this is all luck. I mean, all of this is luck. I mean, I'm riffing here, and the whole thing, he just claims that he's partially sighted and he isn't. And I done that tickled
See,
me.
That's a little bit like my jazz singer that doesn't sing sketch.
Exactly. It's come from the same place, isn't it?
Just a pure surreality to it, isn't it? Like, and sorry to sound a little bit like I'm on a soapbox, but it reminds me a little bit of our current sort of cultural and political climate, where you can just do a barefaced lie, and people seem to be frightened of calling it out now.
Yeah, yeah. If you front out, if you front up enough, if you do it. Now, I've always said this: if you forget someone's name, if you say the wrong name with enough confidence, then they'll be convinced that they're wrong. It's worth trying.
But also, you're right, because Brian, also, even if they know you're wrong, it's like they'll still be a bit embarrassed about it. That, in a sense, I'm really embarrassed that I've got my name, and I wish I was called Steve, because you seem so convinced that I'm called Steve. I wish I fucking was. I'm going to use that because I get people's name wrong on a trice daily basis.
And the problem is that I know you as, you know, I know you better than I probably should, and I know that you're a good guy, and if... A lot of people, if they forget your name, it's because they don't actually respect you as a person. And that I always feel that if I forget someone's name, that like they've taken a person. It's not. It's about me. It's not on you. It's on me.
So there you go. That's something we can carry forward into the next part of our journey, is just do it, but do it with complete conviction.
Absolutely.
As Sanjeev does with all his work, check him out. I think it's honestly, I would say it's probably worth joining Twitter if you're not on Twitter, just to follow Sanjeev Kohli. You will get at least two fucking great jokes a day. I really mean that.
That's kind of you.
As well as all the other stuff that you do. And like you said, so Bags and Mags is in on its 10th season now.
10th season, yes. So we've just recorded it, in fact, last week. So I think it's in the edit now, and it'll go out in maybe February, March, something like that, yeah.
And is Still Game resting like a stake, or is it going to come back? What's the story there?
Well, the problem is we all got killed off.
I'm not up to that bit yet.
So we did, come. Yeah, so that's last series, is that 8 or 9? We've done live shows at the Hydro in Glasgow, which sort of ran parallel to the TV show. So I suppose there's a chance it could be another live show or film or something, but there's no plans. I think... We had a bloody good run, and I think we left when people still wanted more, I think.
I always say that. So probably, you know, well, I mean, actually, I say the opposite. Leave them wanting less, I say, until you get kicked out. That's my mantra, but I think I prefer yours. But Sanjeev Kohli, I don't know how else to say it, but thank you so much for sharing your trove with us today, and we hope we get to speak to you again at some further point down the line. Thank you for...
I would like to think that we will work on the same sketch show at some point. Again,
we will be working on Tim Robinson's I Think You Should Leave this time next year. Sanjeev, thank you so much for joining us today on Sean Keaveney's Cultural Cul-de-Sac.
It's been entirely your pleasure.
Sanjeev Kohli. He's brilliant. He's a wellspring of ideas. Like so many people who come to do this podcast. Just such a creative dude, and so fucking funny all the time. I mean, if you do follow him on Twitter, if you don't, you should. I'd join Twitter just to follow Sanj, because I honestly think he probably mints about 3 or 4 brilliant jokes every day. I don't know how he does it. I'm talking a bit weird because it's really late in the top room, in Dolly's Hill. There's not even anything on the flight path now. Everybody's in bed. I've got 3 kids and a wife underneath me, underneath these flimsy floorboards. So that's why I sound a little bit in my throat. So let's just cap this off with a couple of your ideas. I really do need more of these as well, if that's at all possible. Sean's Creative Cul-de-Sac@gmail.com for your own ideas, lost ideas, inventions, bits of lyrics, sitcoms. Everything, bring it to me, take it, set it in front of me. If you send me a sitcom, I won't read it though. Just give me the top line. I've received this from Laura Reynolds, who says, over the weekend, the small one, not that small, he's 9, has come up with a suitably disastrous invention for the cul-de-sac. Drum roll, please. Can you do that, Ben? It's a bit late. A watch that can turn people into bears, tigers or dinosaurs. What could possibly go wrong? Adds Laura.
I like the sound of that. That sounds fantastic.
I'd love to be turned into a dinosaur. What kind of a dinosaur would you be turned into if you could, if you had the choice? Not a Tyrannosaurus Rex because of the tiny arms. I'd go for a, I'd be a herbivore. I've always wanted to be as long as 23 double-decker buses. It's not going to happen, is it? And this is from Mia Philipson. This is quite involved, but I think it's worth reading. I've been sitting on a potential gold mine for about a decade now, Sean. I love emails that start like this. It's like those ones, you have been contacted by a Nigerian prince. Just send us your bank details and we'll drop $6 million into your bank account, innit? I've done nothing about it, Sean, apart from tell people about my idea from time to time, and now here we are. You have provided the perfect vehicle to bring my idea to the masses. Well, don't know how many people listen, but carry on. Vehicles are a lovely little segue to my idea, which will revolutionise marketing forever. Yes, you can use social media ads or the back of the local newspaper to advertise, but what's that over there in the field? Just on the left out of the car window. That's right, it's a cow with an advert on it. Could, C-U-D, it be any simpler? Meet Market, specialise in marketing your brand on your livestock of choice. Mia's idea. That's right, a cow with an advert on it. Let's face it, cows and sheep are just standing about eating grass. They probably want a job and some income on the side. No animal cruelty involved. Okay, perhaps a little humiliating, but no real harm. How many fields do we drive by bored out of our tiny minds? Rolling green scenery, totally unspoilt. Well, not for long. It's one of the last unexploited corners of the world. It's time for agroculture, or some joke like that. Burger King on a bull, Starbucks on a sheep, couches on a cow. The possibilities are endless. Let's work with our animal friends and give them options to earn a few quid. Meat Market, brackets ing, were animal all over the place. She's just gone absolutely nuts on the puns here, Mia. Thank you very much for that. That's a brilliant and disturbing and dystopian idea. The sort of thing Naomi Klein would be extraordinarily upset about hearing. Thank you very much for it. Keep your suggestions and your ideas rolling in, and please join us in the cul-de-sac next week when we'll have another great guest and me banging on.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.